This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It may not be immediately clear that all of life is gathered together here now. Actually, it is immediately clear, but its immediacy can confuse us if we're not pretty well settled with who, what, where we are, moment by moment. Because then the habit of imagining other worlds and lives will tend to draw our attention away from what's happening now. So there's this extraordinary gift called life. And each of us is the sole giver, receiver, and the gift itself. And if we're not confused by cobwebs, then it will be clear. And then we spend less and less time and energy in search of, you know, something else. This is the conferring of great peace. And unfortunately, one can't confer that to someone else. It would be so nice if one could. Then that would probably be all we'd ever need to do. Go about conferring peace and letting that spread further and further and further until the whole world is at peace with itself. But we can't really do that any more than we can actually confer precepts. We had some discussion at the priest seminar yesterday at Green Gulch. The Japanese term jukai generally means conferring or giving precepts. Interestingly, Dogen has an essay in his great collection called Jukai, same pronunciation, but the character is a little different. And he uses the character that means receiving precepts. So both work, and both hint at a deeper truth that precepts aren't really passed from one person to another. It's more like they manifest in someone's life. And if the person would like to make a vow that the precepts shall continue to manifest in his or her life, sometimes we have a little celebratory event. And we'll probably have one of those here in January, by the way. An event in which precepts are not conferred. But a body-mind enlivened by practice of the precepts is acknowledged. And it's such an occasion that, you know, we give a new name, even. The person has a new name. So this is the same gift that I was speaking of before. And each person who wishes to undergo this ceremonial initiation is simultaneously giver, receiver, and gift. So it's like a little birthday party. So just as with other aspects of Buddha Dharma, nothing is actually given. As Dogen says, each life manifests true nature without ceasing. But if we are confused, as one of the old poems says, mountains and rivers will seem like they're a problem. They're blocking our path. So one way of dealing with confusion is to sit in an unconfused way. And of course, sometimes people come here and they're interested in a practice like that. So this morning Kato-san told some people about that practice. And you can usually tell it's going to be a while before they discover their own willingness to sit in an unconfused way. After all, there are so many cobwebs, you know. Shakyamuni Buddha brushed them away for us. Showed how they can be brushed away. Showed how unsubstantial they are. Somebody's happy out there. Some little child reminded us of the gift of life once again. I guess, I suppose it's true. In a way, anyhow, as Mr. Yeats said, that peace comes dropping slow. The only issue there was that Mr. Yeats seemed to think that he had to be someplace in particular for that to happen. Not to be dismissive of him, but that's a kind of a confusion, you know, to associate true peace with some place or some circumstance. Still, it doesn't keep me from getting cranky when, as is usually the case, some neighbor or other has a construction project involving much hammering, sawing, power tools, and so forth, as though that weren't peaceful. So I too am sweeping cobwebs. And week after next, we'll have a pretty good opportunity to do some sweeping. We attempt to have our yearly retreat. We'll see if it actually happens. We try to arrange it so that mostly people don't have to do anything, but sit in an unconfused way and walk and eat and sleep and so forth in an unconfused way. And so doing, clarify more and more what is this body-mind. And usually in a retreat, you know, sometimes, actually more cobwebs than usual even show up because of the workings of karma, cause and effect. When we try to you still, in the midst of upwelling of life, there's some resistance. You know? Body hurts. Mind is constantly demonstrating its aliveness and its creativity by tossing up all kinds of things. So just as in other traditions of Dharma, one can sit as the deity. One can sit as Avalokiteshvara herself. We sit as the one who is not confused or busy. One who is not at all dismayed or distracted by cobwebs. This is not just a very powerful practice, but perhaps the most powerful of all, most transformative. And furnishes you with the least amount of equipment to effect transformation with, which is kind of unfair, but that's the way it is. Mostly we ask that we all leave our equipment at the door. Of course, in the story of the sixth ancestor, you know, that famous Chan or Zen fable, one of Hongran's good students, you know, wrote this poem about how we should spend the whole time brushing away cobwebs, keep the mirror right, you know. And then along comes Sui Nang, who says, you know what, the cobwebs are the mirror too, Bob. Then Hongran, the master, said, that's right. He's right. Of course, he's this ignorant woodcutter from God knows where. So if I give him the robe and the bowl, people will kill him. So in the fable, of course, Kuei Nan gets the robe and the bowl and then is at midnight and is told, okay, now run. Which he goes running off into the wilderness. And the next day, it was expected that Hongran would give a talk like he usually did. And when the summons to the Dharma Hall didn't happen, the director goes and says, what's up? How come we're not having a talk? And Hongran just said, my Dharma has gone. So people had to go puzzle over that for a while. What does that mean? My Dharma's gone? And then someone said, where's that illiterate guy who was pounding rice? And it was discovered that he had disappeared in the night. And somebody figured out that he had received lineage from Hongran, and off he went. And the pivot there was that the cobwebs themselves are the mirror. So we recommend sit and practice in just that way. Whole body mind as mirror. Whole world, whole universe as mirror. The dust itself, mirror. And let that powerful solvent do its work. In so doing, as Dogen says, there will be no precept you're not keeping. There'll be none of the six perfections that are not manifested. Thus, giver, receiver, and gift are celebrated together. What do you think? Do you see a way for you to follow in there? Supposed to do our little full moon observance today, as Kato-san announced. So I don't know, what do people want to do? Want to do the short version? Want to do the long version? Do you want me to do no version? Anybody? All opinions are invited.
I vote for short.
Okay, we got a short.
I'm feeling the short as well.
We got two shorts.
But long soon, next month or something soon.
Maybe next month if we're here, if the world is here in a month, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose.
Who would be hurt if we did the short version? Whose feelings would be hurt? Nobody?
All beings might.
Yeah, that guy was going to say.
Oh, that guy. I don't
he'd be okay with it, probably.
I think.
Samantabhadra, maybe.
Buddha, I think they'd all be okay. It's like any effort we make is good.
Can I actually ask a question?
Yes.
And it's not, I guess, the center of your talk, but I keep thinking about, we were talking about, I keep wanting to say Adam, but it's not Adam, that's a rock star, Noah Levine.
Mm-hmm.
And his ability to raise $500,000 for his, Dharma group,
yeah,
and the nuns and Isan, at the beginning of this, even if it wasn't $500,000. And what do you think it is about? I mean, is it just like with these personalities that go to the depths of difficult living, we'll call it? Is it just that? Do you think it's just that people are like, well, this is a poor old slob like me? Mm. Is that, do you think that's the appeal, or do people think in order to rise to notable spiritual development, you have to visit the depths of hell in order to do that? And what's my question, I guess, for myself is, what's wrong with those of us who don't?
Mm-hmm.
You say, no, I don't need to.
Those of us who don't visit the depths of hell?
Yeah.
Well,
they're not, often, I feel like, not as highly regarded as those who do.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly. Of course, a good Dr. Jung would say, no, everyone has to. It may not appear to be so, but there's no way for the ultimate wholesome archetype that he calls the self to manifest without visiting those places we'd rather not visit. Now, some people who have kind of really acted that out, like our revered founder, Yisan, or Noah Levine, or other folks, they make it very easy for people to see in them the hero archetype, which is very powerful. You know, practically, I think, you know, Jung and Professor Campbell, who kind of found a way to market Jung, how he managed that, but have discovered that practically every culture has that. The story of the person who, you know, starts off maybe kind of ordinary and manages a heroic journey where he or she confronts what is difficult and challenging and returns, you might say, a whole person. Returns from the journey whole or complete, which is what Jung meant by the self archetype.
I can't help but think that's the same as Yeats saying, peace is over there.
Mm.
To point at that and say that's, I mean, I guess why do you have any sense, or you're a lot more well read than I am, or than this practice, why would we think that this is important to people?
And why would we think what
is it? It has to be a hero in order to be influential.
Well,
or
is it original sin? You know? Is it primal ignorance? Which of those fables will we choose that, you know, to be the one that makes sense to us or motivates us? Something, you know, something seems to be a little off in our human story, and people have called it all kinds of things. But this notion of either returning or moving ahead into a space where wounds have been healed, again, is practically universal. All of us have encountered a loss of innocence at one time or another, where the little boy or girl who was skipping happily down the street singing runs into something else and realizes, oh boy, it's not all roses, is it? Or those roses have thorns and I'm bleeding. So, you know, Jung might call that the abyss. And you can't, the abyss is not bridged except by our own body-mind. Pretty much that seems to be indispensable. In Zen they have that thing, the cave of the black dragon. So dark, you can't see anything except maybe the glowing eyes of the dragon. That's about it. So, well, what does that mean for ordinary folks? Generally, it means acknowledging that we're not in control, and that at the end of all human endeavor is the dissolution of this body mind. And when we're little, you know, we don't think about that. But at some point, everyone comes to stand at the edge of that precipice. that many people feel like something needs to be done there. Where's the bridge? Oh, I'm the bridge. Cool. But that may take some time, you know, to accept. Not to create, you're not building a bridge, but to accept that this body-mind is the bridge. Is, you know, it's much easier not to swallow that and go back to our habitual ways. Thinking, oh, that can't possibly be so. Oh, no, 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 no. Impossible. So, once again, this practice is sitting as bridge, as abyss, as the dissolving body-mind, and as the limitless universe. Pretty challenging. And also, nothing satisfies like that. Now I've talked so long that now we have to do the short version. So. Are there any other comments or questions? Oh, yes.
For the past, I don't know, several weeks, I guess, both during Zazen and randomly throughout the day, I've been having kind of an upwelling of imagery that I would find very fruitful to use in my craft of quilt making. Mm-hmm. And when it comes up during the day, that's fine. You know, I can sit down and make a little sketch or something. Okay, save that for later, explore mm-hmm. it, see if it's worth doing or not. Mm-hmm. And when it comes up during Zazen, there's a, you know, because it's sort of pleasant.
Yeah.
To sort of engage in the creative process, right, yeah. of whatever that may be, mm-hmm. there's a temptation to want to go down that road. Of course, if I go down that road, then I don't think it's really quite Zazen anymore. It's mm. daydreaming, or it's just mm. engaging in the creative process, or mm. whatever it is you want to call it. So I kind of gently do a little brushing.
When you're in the zendo?
Yes.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, the cobwebs
yes.
manifest again in a different pattern.
Of course.
You know.
Yeah.
So, it's very interesting to sort of be in that sort of that kind of middle ground or something where you're not going in this direction and daydreaming, and yet you're not sort of banging yourself over the head every time a random thought occurs during Zazen, saying, no, yes. that's wrong, that's not right, that's not what Zazen is, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. You know, it's interesting, but either direction is like off the mark.
Well, yeah, you could say either direction is maybe doesn't have the vitality of the middle way, which gently steers between extremes. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but if you engage in a little excursion in the direction of a quilting pattern during Zazen, it's not really a problem. I know I shouldn't
well,
say
I'm
that.
Not, but yeah, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
You didn't hear it here, okay?
It's
but
required.
I kind of feel the same way. Because you know.
Yeah. Plenty of time for Zazen next week.
Yeah, okay. I'm not busy spinning my wheels doing, you know, okay, now if I do this, then I can do that. Oh, what mm-hmm. color? And then, you know,
because
uh-huh. it can build on itself very
yes.
easily.
Yes, it can. Right? But it seems like you notice that.
Yeah.
But those are cobwebs. And you can. Those are cobwebs and they're mirrors.
Wait, what's cobwebs?
All that. All the
they're not
perambulations.
They're not necessarily cobwebs. They
okay.
may be.
Meaning, it doesn't, like you say, it may not be a problem, necessarily.
It may not be a problem, no, exactly.
I'm sorry.
The cobwebs are the mirror is kind of your,
that's
your point,
yeah.
is, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yes. And, you know, that is the heart of Zazen. Most people, most of us, find it somehow more useful to, you know, the precious environment created by practice place to kind of, as you say, steer gently away from what's so easy to do when we're in a less structured environment. I mean, people find it helpful somehow, just because maybe it makes it a little easier to see what's the nature of a cobweb. But it's not really a problem. And somebody else, a great, much greater Dharma exemplar than I, said that too. I think that was Uchiyama, who said, you know, people worry about like daydreaming or, you know, tripping down memory lane or being sleepy. It's none of it is a problem. Why? Because it is all the great mirror. And if we sit in that confidence, which doesn't mean thinking about that all the time, just means, you know, settling the body mind, sitting where you're sitting, that's all there is to it, you will eventually discover, you know, the great mirror for yourself. So I guess we'll do the short version if some of you folks want to stay for that. And we can have tea, and you're all welcome to the retreat. Remember, you just have to sign up if you want meals. And if you just want to sit, you can come to any period you want.
Also, if you would like to cook,
if you would like to
cook, sitting, or whether you're sitting or not, there's another sign-up sheet upstairs.
That'd be a big help, too. So I don't know what's going to happen. We'll just see. Thank you all very much.
May our intention be clear.